Radio. BB does Soho. With BB Lynch.
Hello everyone, what a beautiful day. It's as beautiful as spotting Melania cleaning 20 cars for £1 in Walthamstow. Good to see you safe, lady. Hey, I'm BB Lynch and you're listening to BB Does Soho on your fantastic Soho Radio. I'm all yours for the next 2 hours. Shall we do it? I'm BB Lynch and that was Shanice and I Love Your Smile, girl. I can't wait to get my teeth fixed. That's happening soon, Nick.
Is it?
Yeah, be good. Hey, how are you? What's been happening to me?
You need it.
I've decided to get in shape because producer Nick thinks I'm fat.
How come?
Why? You tell me.
No, I just said that there was this interesting diet and that you might be interested in it, because I was interested.
The little shit rang me up specially to say it.
I hate you.
Everyone, I need to apologise, A, for the S word I just said. I'm so sorry. And also, shit. And I can't see today, so good luck, everyone.
Going well
with
so far,
me, really. It's gone all right. Let me tell you about today's show. Our first guest is writer and curator Paul Gorman. Paul will be telling us about his fantastic new exhibition, Print, Tearing It Up, and all about his Soho. And in the second hour, we'll be joined by journalist, author, and friend of show, Paul Burston. Paul will be telling us about the award-winning LGBT plus literary salon Polari that returns to the South Bank Centre later this month. So please join in. Tweet at Soho Radio and at BB Lynch. Tweet and say hello. Or tweet and tell me that you're a fan of the Chafing Thigh. Chafing Thigh.
Oh, this. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I like the playoffs. No diggity, no doubt. Play on, play out. Play on, play out. Yo, Dre, drop the verse.
It's going down, fades of Black Street. The homies got at me, collab creations. Bump like agony, no doubt. I put it down, never slouch. As long as my credit can vouch, a dog couldn't catch me. Say, tell me who could stop with Dre making moves, attracting honeys like a magnet, giving them orgasms with my mellow accent. Still moving this flavor with the homies Black Street and Teddy, the original Rough Shakers.
Shutting it down, good lord. Baby got them open all over town. Strictly bitch, you don't play around. Cover much grounds, got game by the pound. Getting paid is a forte. Each and every day, true play away. I can't get her out of my mind.
Wow.
I think about the girl all the time.
Wow, wow.
East side to the west side, pushing fat rides, it's no surprise. She got tricks in the stash, stacking up the cash, fast when it comes to the gas. By no means average, it's on when she's got to have it. Baby, you're a perfect 10, I wanna get in, can I get down so I can? I like the way you work it,
no diggity,
I got to bag it up.
Bag it up.
I like the way you work it.
No diggity.
I got to bag it up.
Bag it up, girl.
I like the way you work it.
No diggity.
I got to bag it up.
Bag it up.
I like the way you work it.
No diggity.
I got to bag it up.
She's got class and style. She knowledge by the pound. Baby never act wild. Very low key on the profile. Catching feelings is a no. Let me tell you how it goes. Curves the word, spins the verb. Lovers it curves so freak what you heard. Rolling with the fatness, you don't even know what the half is. You got to pay to play, just for shorty bang bang to look your way. I like the way you work it, trump tight all day every day. You're blowing my mind, maybe in time, baby, I can get you in my ride.
I like the way you work it,
yeah. No diggity,
I got to bag it up.
Bag it up.
I like the way you work it,
no diggity,
I got to bag it up.
Oh,
I like the way you work it,
no diggity,
I got to bag it up.
Bag it up, babe.
I like the way you work it,
no diggity,
I got to bag it up.
First class from New York City to Black Street. What you know about me? Now don't be a thing. Cartier wooded frame sported by my shorty. As for me, icy gleaming pinky diamond ring. We bees to buy this click up on this scene. Ain't you getting bored with these fake boards? High shows improves, no doubt. I've been thinking so. Please excuse if I come across rude. That's just me. And that's how a play it's got to be. Stay kicking game with a capital G. Ask the peoples on my block. I'm as real as can be. Word is born. Faking moves never been my thing. So Teddy, pass the word to Yoga and Chauncey. I'll be sending a call, let's say around 3:30. Queen Pen
no
and Black
diggity, no diggity, no doubt, baby.
I like the way you work it.
No diggity,
I got the bag.
Girl, get it going on.
I like the way you work it.
This is BB Does Soho on Soho Radio Culture, sohoradiolondon.com, and click on Culture. And we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio. And that was Blackstreet featuring Dr. Dre and Queen Penn and No Diggity. And that's for my lovely friend Ali and for Ivor. Oh my God, I love Ivor. Guess what? Our first guest is here. Paul Gorman is a writer and curator who has contributed to many of the world's leading publications, including GQ, Vanity Fair and Vice. His books include The Story of the Face, the magazine that changed culture, Straight with Boy George, and his music press history in their own right. His exhibition subjects include David Bowie, The Face and Malcolm McLaren, and his latest project, Print, Tearing It Up, opens at Somerset House this week. Welcome to Soho Radio, Paul Gorman.
Hello, how are you?
I'm all right, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
This is our first time in this specific studio, so can I suggest and request that none of you steal anything?
Okay, yeah.
Because I know what you like.
Do you mean you're going to check us on the way out?
Yeah, it was...
Because I see a couple of albums over there.
Yeah, there's a whole rack of, there's a whole wall of vinyl.
Interesting vinyl.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to.
I've got my overcoat with me.
it's a gorgeous little studio, isn't it?
It's very. We got a window.
We got some fretboard. We've got no air, but we've got a window. We've got a little lamp thing. We haven't got any signs up. We'll bring some photos of us that Phoenix Artists rejected, and we'll just put them up on the wall. It'll be fine. Hey, Paul.
Hello.
Let's talk about Print, Tearing It Up, independent British magazines changing the world. And some quote from the blurb, this new exhibition champions the power of print by celebrating independent voices. Do you think print still has power?
Yeah, I think it does, particularly in the independent area. What's happened is that post-crash about 10 years ago, and with the onset of digitisation and the online world, the corporate model started to fail, which is why, for example, the NME finally stopped printing an edition a few months ago, because it was bought by various people, including Time Inc. And then eventually it was bought by a private equity firm who said, well, what's the point in publishing this? And the point in publishing it was that it had some kind of link back to its roots as one of those inkies that sold 250,000 copies a week.
Yeah.
So that's gone in the corporate world. You can't work it that way.
Yeah.
Glamour magazine, for example, the Condé Nast. Magazine closed a couple of years ago, year before last. Yeah,
we could just name every title I've ever worked for.
But it was selling 260,000 copies a month. But still, it didn't work in that corporate environment.
Right.
But my show is about independent magazines and those small magazines that can make it work. That make it one of the platforms that they, you know, they have a range of activities, whether it's consultancy or, you know, working in agencies, but they use this very impactful medium to produce a niche magazine which appeals to maybe 5,000 people. But those 5,000 people are quite interested, and there's quite an exchange that goes on over many of the issues which affect us today.
Well, do you remember we had Simon Cantorin from Haymarket Media, and he was saying exactly that. He said what's happening now is it's the smaller titles in terms of sales, but then they drive traffic to the website as well.
Yeah.
So actually they feed each other.
Yeah. And what happened post crash is that a generation, millennials, I guess, came of age, and the chips were really down for them in terms of job opportunities. And so they had to kind of do it themselves. And one of the ways in which they did it themselves was to get out of that digital ghetto and produce print magazines. So I'm talking about magazines such as Mush Pit, which is really a great young women's magazine for young women. It's very satirical. It's very Mickey-taking. I mean, at the other end of the scale in that area, there's The Gentlewoman, which is a very cool and kind of blue stocking look at femininity, but nevertheless quite oppositional. Mm. So there are plenty of examples across sort of race, identity, sexual politics.
Exactly,
where
it's not
these
just
issues
lifestyle.
Are being addressed. Yeah, exactly. And it's not just music.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think as well, in the kind of era of fake news and online manipulation, print, we need print?
Yeah, definitely we do. I mean, Rob Reiner, who's got the film director, who's got a new film out about the Iraq war and the lies that were told during that. It's coming out in the next couple of months, I think. He was saying on this American TV show the other day, Morning Joe, that democracy, and I don't want to get heavy here, but this is very important, actually, considering what we're going through. Democracy relies on a free and independent press. And the stories of Windrush and Grenfell are being told by such magazines as Trench or Gal Dem, they're really addressing those issues far better than the mainstream media,
yeah.
and without the spin that politicians are allowed to put on it.
I love seeing the politicians squirming now, even like, I mean, less important, but still really frustrating people involved, the whole rail shit that's going on up in the north. And Damien, what's it now, saying something? The fury has to reach that level that they'll,
well,
they'll jump
these,
in.
These people have to be held to account. And my favourite, one of my favourites, there's plenty of favourites in the show. We've got like 300, 400 magazines in the show. One of my favourites is, and I know I'm not allowed to swear, is called Expletive Brexit. And it was produced by this bloke, Dan 3000. And it's 12 pages of basically anger about such people as Nigel Farage. He sent me a couple of copies and we were in contact, and it was produced, the first edition was produced last September, and he was saying, I don't think it's angry enough. And this is really volcanic anger. And so it's got that very English, British, you know, kind of independent attitude.
And because we have such a history of it.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to, we're in Soho, which for me, the jewel of Soho isn't quite a lot of the things that people usually talk about. It's the private eye offices. The Private Eye has been produced from there in Greek Street since 1961. And it's now selling more copies than it ever has done, about 500,000 a month. And its mixture of absolutely biting satire and investigative journalism couldn't exist in a corporate environment. As soon as that was sucked into, you know, you have to be nice to advertisers be nice to politicians.
Yeah.
And so Private Eye, to me, is the shining example of where our show is at, really.
Can I ask a really crass question, Producer Nick?
Yeah.
Because it's...
you don't normally ask.
No, I know. Do we started a new polite thing, haven't we? We're quite formal with each other.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's lovely.
Only on air.
I can attest to that.
Is the independent magazine world a rich kid's world?
I think that there is this issue about people coming from backgrounds where they feel as though that it's an option for them. But there again, I mean, I was thinking about Soho and as I came here this morning from the suburbs, and really in the centre of town, there isn't a lot of action going on for me anymore creatively. Where it's been happening, probably in the greatest musical movement at the right now and probably the last 10 years, is grime. And that's coming from places like Bow and Brentford. And that's also spawning a whole bunch of print literature. There was a great magazine, Woofer, which is no longer going, which is really fantastic. We got that in the show. I mentioned Trench, there's Push. Those guys, those people, those young men and women aren't coming from a background of privilege, but still they're choosing that as an option. But I think your point probably pertains, actually.
Like the gentlewoman, for instance.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Penny's an academic and she'd been working in fashion and academia for a long time before she launched it. And at the same time, Bertie and Char behind Mushpit, you know, they style and they consult and they do all that stuff as well. So I think it's an issue, but it's also one we want to address during the show to find out. I mean, one of the things that we're doing with the show is that it's all about do it yourself, really, because these people did it themselves, whether it was the Underground Press with Oz or Private Eye or Mushpit Now. And so on the back of the catalogue, which is designed by Scott King, the great designer who's done the graphic design for the show, we just put on the back DIY, you know, and so hopefully it will inspire people who wouldn't think of it as an option to go ahead and do it.
I love that. I feel inspired. Can I still do stuff?
Yeah,
too old. Tell us how the exhibition works then. So it's really hands-on, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, the problem with... I mean, I love magazines and I surrounded myself with them to the exasperation of my various partners, my wife now, down
the
years.
You've just got rooms.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a storage unit which is absolutely packed with stuff, and a lot of my stuff is in the show. But it's quite difficult to activate in a way. And the first thing you don't want to do is put it behind a frame, because then you're making a comment about it. It's kind of a dead form, isn't it? You're just saying, oh, there it is, hanging on the museum wall or whatever, in our case, the Somerset House wall. And so I wanted to engage, we wanted to engage, the curator with me, Claire Catterall, and I, we wanted to engage people as they came along. So we haven't got a strict narrative, so it doesn't start in 1914 with Blast and end today. We chose subjects that were, I think, quite pressing today. And I've always liked newsstands. I don't know about you, but I quite like newsstands. And there was the one at Great Marlborough Street, which was the one to go and get the copy of The Enemy 2 days early when I was a kid. So I used to come in from Hendon and get that copy and then get the 13 bus home. And it featured on the cover
Benny
of the
Hedgehog
face.
On the top of the bus. Did you smoke on buses? Do you remember
yes.
that?
Yes. Oh, yes.
I used to love smoking on buses.
Oh, yeah. That was great. Yeah, and in the first and last carriage of the tube
yeah.
as well.
Yeah, and on...
How we all didn't die
and in the
several
cinema.
Times over.
And in planes, back of the plane.
Oh, yeah, back of the plane.
Oh, I miss
yeah, the cinema. You had to sit on one side.
Mm. Yeah, because the smoke
up,
wouldn't.
The yeah. and down and
so they might as well be. They might as well be lighting up and enjoying
right.
themselves.
I but anyway,
the entire way on a flight to Hong Kong once, it was God knows how we didn't go up in a ball of flame. Anyway, where was I?
Great Marlborough Street, and you'd get your
so
enemy.
I like the vernacular design of those things. Just like the cabman shelters, they've just refurbished the one at Temple. I took some photographs of it the other day. I just love that stuff, and so. There's one, it's not a posh one, there's one at Sloane Square Station. I took some photographs, made some very bad drawings. I'm no designer or artist. And then a brilliant guy called Ian Donnelly at Somerset House built one out of wood. And we painted it fluoro pink because that's the colour of the exhibition. And we've covered it with contemporary magazines.
Oh, I love.
You can read, there's 40 or 50 of them. And they're on these really kind of groovy dog lead things. So you can't run away with them, but you can go through them and read them.
That's
so
amazing.
It's a way of kind of, it's a tip of the hat to those newsstands as such great gathering places.
And you show in the exhibition the process, like so from concept to
yeah,
distribution.
In various, Nick Logan, who owned The Face, he's loaned us one of the paste-ups from the first issue. There was a great architectural magazine called NATO in the 80s, and they've loaned us page layouts and
which was a proper cut-and-paste stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I mean, when I started as a journalist, that's
Same.
What we had to do. You know,
yeah.
A tin of cow gum, a scalpel, an emerald,
yeah.
and you're away, you know. So we wanted to show, reflect in this quite cold digital environment that this was a very hands rendered craft and I think that there are magazines today. There's one called Romp, which is a little photostated fanzine made by an architect called Alpo De Parni, and it's tiny, it's A5 and it's 12 pages and it's really hand rendered but it's really intelligent
yeah.
and it's got that kind of punk attitude which we really like.
There's a really beautiful magazine down in I live in Hove now, down there, called Viva, and there's a Brighton version, a Lewis version, and the cover is always a local artist's drawing or painting of, you know, somewhere in Brighton or somewhere in Hove, and they're just so gorgeous
yeah.
and it is, and because I've worked in print and online, and it's nice seeing something online, but and it's the vinyl equivalent, isn't it? There's nothing quite like picking up a magazine when you've done a month working towards it. And
yes,
then you
exactly.
And it's like there's the big pile turn up and you cut the little strapping thing and it's just so amazing.
Because it takes care and consideration, doesn't it? Because Sharan from this magazine, Burnt Roti, which is for young South Asian
women. Oh, I thought
Asian
that sounded great, yeah.
She says, you know, you can put, you know, with a bit of thought, you can put, not that President Trump has any thought at all when he tweets, but with some thought, you can put something online, but then it's gone
yeah.
into the ether.
Yeah.
If you put it on the page, it's
yeah.
there forever.
There's a great mag title, Delayed Gratification.
Yeah, that's in the show. That's
so,
Slow News.
Brilliant.
Which is such a good idea
yeah.
because it comes out every quarter.
Yeah.
And they really consider stuff that we see flash past us, you know, like a bullet train.
Yeah, and gives the end of the story as well.
Oh, that's great.
So, like, if it'd be Grenfell, idea. You'd have the whole story, the horror, the excuses, the lies, the promises to help, the no help, then what's going on now,
yeah,
and then the outcome. So in that whole time, you get the whole story.
Yeah, because often, after the sensationalism,
we don't hear.
You
well,
only get
we
the
also
truth
don't,
of it.
We also don't have time,
later.
Do we, as consumers?
Yeah.
We've got to move on to the next thing or else we're just going to get in a quagmire. I think there's also another thing which has come out of the show, or come out of my thinking about it over the last couple of years, is that, and I think it's aligned with Me Too as well, it's young womanhood ain't going to take it anymore. And they're doing it for themselves. That's really an important aspect of the show. Together with, we kind of trace the lineage back to magazines such as Spare Rib in the early 70s, which in turn came out of the underground press.
But that's really important, isn't it? You don't, you know, of course, you know, independents have been independent forever, and you don't want it to be just a modern thing. You know, you want the lineage, and which takes us to. And I saw, we'll call it stalking, but it's research. I was looking on your on your Twitter, on your Insta, Twitter, I can't remember, and the giant mind map.
Yeah.
So what's that?
Well, I just had this idea. I actually wanted the show to be quite cluttered, so that like when you go to one of those newsstands, and it really looks so visual. That you don't, you go wanting to buy something and then you come away with something
and
else.
And you see the top of another and you're like, what's that? What's
that's
that?
Intriguing.
Yeah, yeah.
Or mad. Or, and so the mind map was kind of the inside of my head as I was thinking about all of these magazines that go back to this quarterly, which only lasted two issues before World War One intervened quite seriously, called Blast, which was a manifesto of modernism produced in England by this character, Wyndham Lewis. And so Blast is at the centre of the mind map, and then we kind of go out into these various areas through Private Eye, Time Out, The Face, you know, just so many of them. There's about 350 on there, and it took me 2 weeks to design it on some graph paper, which kept on growing. I kept on sellotaping bigger bits of graph paper to get this explosion, and then Scott and the designer he worked with, Reese, worked it out for me. Because I would never have been able to. So it's over a whole wall. It's about 8 metres by 5 metres. It's
amazing.
Huge.
I got called a dinosaur recently, which is obviously lovely because I kind of started in print. Not by Nick. I know I looked at Nick then. You just called me fat. You haven't called me a fat dinosaur.
No.
You just called me fat.
You don't have scale.
Well, not with this T-shirt. It's long. Anyway.
Did dinosaurs have scale?
No. Feathers. There was someone posted something the other day on Twitter and they just went, oh, it's a long read. And I thought, oh, I bloody hate that. And call it a long read.
Yeah.
And I hate this
whole...
You mean
a magazine article.
Yeah, exactly, like a proper feature. Yeah. And I hate this dumbing down and, you know, I contributed some online, you know, for my sins, and bloody hell, the quality of writing is so bad. Not mine, I'm brilliant, but the quality of writing of everything else. And so is the quality of writing in these magazines, because they can go long read. Are we back to good journalism? Is it solid?
I think it is.
It's not clickbait crap.
No, it's not. And I think it is a reaction against that, which a lot of people fell for, really. And a lot of people of my generation did as well. You know, they kind of opted for Facebook. There is some statistic in America that 60% of Americans get their news from Facebook, which is this kind of, who knows whether it's true or not. And it's really badly written, by the way, as well.
Yeah.
Whereas I think this generation I'm talking about really, you know, they kicked against the pricks, basically.
I love it. Write that down.
I can say that.
Write that. You can, because I have
Samuel Beckett quote.
You just did, yes. That's a literary quote.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay, you'd be instantly desperately searching for a filthy quote. Which was the first indie when you were growing up to grab you?
It was called Friends. It had come out of an earlier underground magazine called Friends in the conventional spelling, but this was spelled F-R-E-N-D-Z, which I liked anyway. I was 12 and this is the early 70s, and it used photography. Penny Smith was the photographer who later took the cover of London Calling and was one of the great rock photographers, and is still a great rock photographer.
Not the GMTV presenter, Penny Smith.
No,
another
very talented person as well. Yeah. But this one worked for Friends magazine, and Nick Kent, one of my heroes of the music press, this kind of incredibly debauched and wonderful rock star writer, worked there as well. And when I was 12, I had already been given a couple of copies of Oz, which was then on the slide, and I found this copy of Friends in my local newsagent.
Did you? How was it there?
Yeah, they just had wacky distribution, and for some reason he picked it up, and I've still got that issue. And it kind of introduced me to a world of mature or slightly older journalism. And it kind of really, you know, was alluring.
Yeah. What was your first indie that kind of grabbed you?
I suppose Enemy.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
You
know, the Enemy wasn't an indie.
But it had that
indie spirit, didn't
it? Yeah, you felt that it was, because it was slightly maverick and it was.
And they were annoying advertisers, weren't they? And they were ploughing their own path.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the interesting thing about the show. It's in the show because it was launched as an indie. Yeah. But by the time Nick Logan was working there, I mean, he says that he and Nick Kent and those people, they thought they owned the magazine. And then suddenly, to their horror, this giant corporate, you know, which had estates in South Africa and kind of a dodgy background, went, you know what, you don't own this. And so that's one of the reasons why Nick then launched The Face.
I still think he's one of the greatest rock writers.
Yeah.
Nick Kent went out with Joe Good. They were boyfriend and girlfriend, that's right. That's right.
But I was going to say, the alternatives at the time, you know... When
Face was the one that got me.
There were things like Lookin and,
right.
and you know, Jackie. Yes. And kind of, they were kind of glossy mainstream. So I think if you were reading the NME on the bus, you kind of felt a little bit...
Yeah, it let you into that secret world,
cool,
didn't
a little
it?
Bit
and the writing was great as wasn't it? Yeah. And you? What was your...
The Face.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I pretended to read. I eventually got into it, but I would go, oh, yeah, I would buy it. It was like the equivalent of the coffee table, just, you know, when people are coming around to check out the house, just put a copy of The Face out. The Face, there's a great, I think it's still there, newsagent on Old Compton Street that's... that again, you'd go in and you wouldn't know what they'd have in stock, and it'd just be that excitement.
Well, sadly, actually, the Warder News.
That's
It's going. Oh. Yeah, news came through the other day. I mean, that's because of rising rents in Soho, which is a whole other story.
Yeah.
But at least that proved there are a lot of titles still available.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is this new bunch of magazine shops. Every city, certainly every city with a decent student population, now has a magazine shop. And if you go around the world, in Lisbon we went to one recently, which was just really great.
There's one on Trafalgar Street in Brighton that is incredible.
Right.
I think it's called The Magazine Shop, and you just lose hours in there, and the man that runs it is amazing. It's just brilliant.
All the sort of glossy
fashion
and interior type magazines, and you just think, how can they make money? I mean, each copy is about 10 quid.
It's a really sexy shop, though.
But they're beautiful things.
But there again, that's an investment. What's that, 2 pints of beer? You know, and you've got something... But I align it with the indie label explosion of the late 70s, you know, starting with Stiff in 76. I think that there's as much variety in this. And I think it's come about for the same reasons, actually. That was a response to the kind of dinosaur major record labels and rock
acts. Don't ever say that to me again.
I was talking about...
He
straight
at
me. Yeah. And he pointed.
He actually pointed at me.
Paul.
But I wanted to put it in another context.
You.
But so this is similar, I think. 40 years later, here we are with a great indie scene.
What do you think the future is of indies, for indies?
I think it's really promising, because I think it's so dire for corporate magazines. So it's got to be good for indies.
And people want, in a way, people love to hold vinyl, and it feels different, it sounds different. You know, print reads different.
Well, there's a personal, almost intimate...
Yeah.
interaction that goes with it.
I love that you've got them on the storage or lockup. It's hilarious. Print Tearing It Up runs from 8th of June to the 22nd of August at Somerset House, and it's free, for God's sake. Visit somersethouse.org.uk and at Somerset House for more ticket details, and for updates on all Paul's fabulous projects, follow him on Twitter at PJ Gorman.
BB Does Soho. Lucky Soho.
I'm Bibi Lynch, and you're listening to Soho Radio Culture, sohoradiolondon.com, and click on Culture, and we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio. Coming to you from our beautifully bijou pop-up and studio,
this,
shut
way.
Your
She's
face, on Great Windmill Street.
I'd never have guessed.
I'm joined in the studio by the wonderful Paul Gorman, and it's time for My Soho.
Soho Radio. My Soho with Bibi Lynch.
So before you ever came to Soho...
which is a long time ago.
Yeah, what was... What
can
did,
I remember?
What did, yeah, can you remember? And what did the name Soho mean to you? So where were you raised? Where were you born?
I was born in St John's Wood, and I was raised in Hendon, North London.
Oh, I failed lots of driving tests there.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was a big driving test centre.
So how old were you, do you think, when you first came into Soho?
About 14, 15, we used to get the Red Bus Rovers, which have long gone, but I think they were 30 or 45p or maybe 50p. And you could get any bus or any tube around the whole of London.
Wow, let's bring that back.
So we used to venture out with my dog, Charlie, and we'd head to the West End. It was what every suburban kid does, right? And so, particularly if you're 14, and we'd hang out. And then I got a job when I was 16 in a photo library in Cleveland Street, just north of Soho. And my brother was working in a place in Broadwick Street.
Oh, my God, so you were right in the middle of that.
So I'd already visited him. I think on one of these Red Rover expeditions, we'd turn up at his offices, you know, great. You know.
Is it Natmags on Broadwick? Was it Natmags?
Yes, exactly, yeah, down the end. But he was at, cinema advertising company?
Oh,
Pearl and Dean.
Pearl and Dean.
Really?
He worked at Pearl and Dean. So that's my first entree into the film world. But anyway, so I knew about Soho. And then I got a job at a photo library in Cleveland Street. And so I nipped down at lunchtimes to buy records in Berwick Street Market at Cheapo Cheapo, just around the corner, Great Windmill Street, and kind of engaged with it.
How amazing.
On every level.
So it just, so for you, it was music.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of countercultural activity. I remember around that time, I was at the top of one of the streets, Poland Street, and this couple, older couple than me, I was probably late teens, they were kind of venturing nervously at the top, and they said, "Is this Soho?"
Oh.
Really nervous. I went, "Yeah, it is." Kind of, they passed the threshold.
I just went and got a coffee before the show, and there was this old bloke. He was so sweet. He was talking to this younger bloke, and he was saying, "Someone who works in my office, her son works in London. He's in recruitment. It's a different world." You're like, oh my God! What does Soho? It is. What does Soho mean to you now?
It means various things, really, because I've fallen in and out of love with it several times, and it's had various manifestations in my life. It's not somewhere I gravitate to very much these days. If I do, then I'll go to the Coach and Horses, because I love what Alistair has done with that pub.
Which, the vegan restaurant.
The vegan restaurant as well. But I do remember being in there, you know, when Norman was in there and all of those.
I always wonder what Norman would make of the vegan menu.
Yeah, he'd probably be very grumpy about it, as he was about everything, even things he loved, apparently. Yeah, so I think that's... I'm not a big one for the big Save Soho thing, I've got to tell you.
Why?
Because I think London's a churn. You know, I'm a London lifer, and, you know, my granny came over from Dublin in the 1880s, and my great-grandfather was a tailor in Compton Street in Islington.
Whoa.
So the changes that my father saw during his lifetime were far greater than what we're seeing now. Obviously, we've got the depredations of big property, and that's really disgusting. But that's happening everywhere as well.
Mm.
I'm not saying it's good, but I think that people and places have their time. And I think Soho has had its time, I'm sorry to say.
Could I ask, can you just open the door
view,
for Paul?
Actually.
No, it is really interesting.
It is, because most people obviously are up in arms about, you know.
Right.
But I think...
As am I, but, you know, I think I've got to be realistic about it. And I think one has to be that...
Where do you think the centre of London is now, then?
I think it's in the suburbs. As I said, you know, if you think about grime, if you think about it being the advanced... stage of popular culture, that is really happening in Brentford and Bow. It's not happening in the centre of town. We've been priced out of the centre of town. Nobody can afford to live here.
Yeah.
It has turned into, and quite rightly as well in a way, if you go to American cities, they rely on their past to attract people. So you go to Nashville or Memphis or New Orleans or Austin or Los Angeles or New York now. They are, because it's late capitalism, so places are turned into theme parks because property rules. And so I think that happened to Soho.
Interesting, though, places like this have still...
Well, I think you're a great bastion here.
Don't call me, just call me Bastion.
You're a dinosaur,
and a bastion.
It's just too much.
As in Soho Radio, it's a great bastion and a holdout, and I think that's very important. As is, say, Alistair at the Coach, and, you know, places like 10 Greek Street, the restaurant.
And places change, and then who knows what the...
Exactly.
The next, you know, this area will be like in 10, 15 years. I mean, who just knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Save Soho thing is more about individualism, you know, rather than that corporate bland...
Yeah, I think that's
every
key.
Every high street looking the same. I know it's happening everywhere, but I think Soho was very much about...
Well, where I live in Ealing, we're not very corporate in Ealing, you see. There aren't many corporates there because it's cheaper to operate an independent business, you know. So I think the economics come into play. I also think there is that use it or lose it thing. I mean, one of my friends ran one of the longest nightclubs ever, I think, particularly in Soho, at Madame Jojo's. But when it closed, it was like, oh my God, Madame Jojo's is closing. Mm. I mean, it's a great venue. It's a great site. Fact is, I hadn't been there, and anybody else I knew that was complaining about it hadn't been there for about 10
That's
years.
So true.
It's a really good point. I stopped going there when I realised that every man there had better legs than me. I found it offensive.
Or to be fair, you know.
Oh, you little shit. you bitch. We also ask our guests to think of some songs that, for whatever reason, remind them of Soho. What was your first choice?
What was my first choice?
Well, you chose three and you can have them in any order.
What should I start with? I'll go back, to February 1977 when I saw the Heartbreakers at the Speakeasy, which isn't strictly in Soho, just north of Soho in Margaret Street. So just by...
Is that okay,
north
Nick?
Of Oxford.
Is that all right?
Are we allowing that?
Yeah, we can allow it. Fringes.
I think I've walked through Soho to get to the gig.
No, I'll allow it because you know that and you've acknowledged it. I hate it when people can't Denmark Street isn't Soho, which it isn't.
So if I tried to get it past you and not explain it...
You're aware of it, and I accept that.
And so it was great seeing the Heartbreakers because they were Americans. They'd been here a couple of months. They were these incredibly glamorous junkies, basically. some of them had been in the New York Dolls. The other thing that set them aside from the other punk bands at that time, and this is pretty early in that whole thing, February 77, so it had been going about a year, was that they could really play.
Shall we?
So this is the track Born to Lose.
That, Nick?
Well, I thought that was going to end in a spectacularly elaborate
clanging chord
in a punk style, but it actually faded out.
Beautiful little harmony.
Yeah, so that's Johnny Hunters and the Heartbreakers and Born to Lose from the album LAMF.
Oh, what's that?
Well, what do you think that might stand for?
LAMF.
Like MF.
Can we try and make this show just, after sponsorship?
It's a well-known and respected album.
Hey, Paul, who's your favourite Soho character?
Mark Powell, the tailor. He's been a friend for a long time, and he also is not sentimental. He doesn't subscribe to that. Not Save Soho. Obviously, he wants to save Soho. He's a major part of it. But I quite like his ironic sense of humour. And, he's a good bloke as well.
Can you be an ironic tailor?
Is he ironic? No, don't call him ironic. Yeah. He's quite an ironic bloke in his sense of humour, but no, his tailoring is straight down the middle.
Gorgeous. what's your favourite Soho bar, restaurant or venue?
I think Greek Street, 10 Greek Street, the restaurant, I really, really like. It's not been open that long, has it? 2-3 years, 4 years maybe? Yeah. But it's just got that thing, I think. Who's the bloke there? Anyway, they're really nice. The food is great. You just drop in.
That's always helpful for your favourite restaurant.
Well, you know, this foodie world, you go to places which are much vaunted and it's kind of very disappointing, particularly for the money you're paying.
I think I'd prefer good service to a good food.
Really?
Yeah, I don't want the food to be bad.
Really, really bad food.
It's important,
but really
though,
bad
isn't it?
Service right, drives me insane.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. And there are so many people who get away with bad service, right?
Let's get rid of all of them.
Yeah.
What's been your most memorable night in Soho?
It started in St John's Wood at the Saatchi Gallery. It was a night called Pagan Funwear, and it was a fashion show.
Pagan Funwear.
Pagan Funwear.
Sounds like your kind of.
Yes.
Oh, we'll open the box. We'll open the box in a minute. Okay.
You should have been there, BB. It was great. Maybe you were.
Maybe, who knows?
It was on Midsummer's Night, 1996, I think, and it was pop stars designing fashion for walking around on the catwalk and then for auctioning. And David Bowie designed a suit of bandages, like an invisible man kind of thing.
And which it was just really, he went back to right at the very end, didn't he?
He
with
did.
The button eyes.
He did.
Yeah, the very final video.
I'd not
video.
Thought of that. Yeah. That's a...
All right, you two.
I should have to think about that.
So
it was organised by Brian Eno and his wife, Anthea. Anyway, I digress. We ended up in Soho at this fantastic place, the Venus Bar, which was an illegal drinker underneath the Venus pawn shop opposite the French House, which is on Dean Street.
I remember the Venus Bar.
So the Venus Bar, you went into the pawn shop and there was a door, which was an unmarked door. So I suppose people thought that it was a storage room. And you wouldn't go in there. And if you walked in there, you went down the stairs to this sticky floored,
Sounds very dark,
where they sold cans of Stella or whatever the local off-licence was selling, in buckets. And it was open all night.
And so
we
stayed
ended
there all
up
night.
There. Yeah, we stayed there till 6 a.m.
Yeah, they got away with it because they kind of said that it was a private party. And it was
I think
there,
so.
You know, so they were letting friends.
But they had pool tables down there and I saw Damien Hirst there. And it was just, it was the total mixture of late night cabbies, trannies.
Oh, brilliant.
Cabbies and trannies.
Yes.
That's all you need.
Did Bowie turn up to the bar?
No, he wasn't there. But a couple of months later, my friend Jimmy stormed into the office where I was working and said the Venus Bar was closed. And he'd walked in there and there was a sign on this anonymous door which said the Venus Bar is closed forever.
Oh, that's...
And that was it.
So see, that's why we have to save Soho.
Yes, exactly.
Can I tell Paul the story? Can I tell Paul the story that I say all the time that I really love about the sex shop?
Oh, so
I saw a man on Brewer stepping out of a sex shop, clicked his jaw and walked on. Anyway, what's your second song?
My second song is a version of Wire's I Am the Fly by Adamski, who's billed himself as Adam Sky. And this was a big favourite at Nag 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 at Ghetto in the early noughties. We'll be right back.
you zone out a bit.
Does it?
Yeah.
You're coming up.
Excuse me. Like Diana Ross.
Yeah.
Oh, I miss her.
I Am the Fly. Adam Sky.
That's very good.
Adamski.
It's very good. Yeah. It took me years, the Adamant thing.
Adamant?
Yeah. Anyway, Aladdin Sane.
Yeah.
Took me ages.
Lucky and that's just the
lucky
age.
I'm pretty. Paul.
Yeah.
If you were mayor of... I'm scared to ask this, Nick. I'm scared to ask it. If you were mayor of Soho, God, what would you do or change?
Knock it all down.
Knock it all down.
Got to have change.
What would I do or change?
Mm.
Oh, I don't know. I really don't know. I can't answer that question, really, because I don't know enough about Soho now.
That's a good answer.
Reopen the Venus Bar.
Yes.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes, there you go. If money and time are no object, what would you do? What would be your ideal Soho day? Where would you start?
Where would I start? Yeah, see, like I say, this is all going back into the past. I mean, I used to go to this great cafe on not Great Marlborough Street, Broadwick Street, which we used to call HQ, my friends and I, because we used to meet there and plot and nothing would ever happen. And I can't remember the name of it now.
We'll call it HQ.
HQ. And so that's where I'd start, because we always used to have breakfast there.
What was your breakfast of choice?
Bubble and Squeak.
Oh,
I love Bubble and Squeak with an egg.
With an egg.
For a long time, I haven't eaten meat, or I didn't eat meat. I've gone back to it now. And that was a great kind
Why did you go back?
I married an Australian who's an excellent cook.
He's an honest guest. He's an honest guest.
I like honest.
With your Bubble and Squeak, would you have Tommy K or Daddy's?
HP.
There you go. Houses of Parliament, as producer Nick says to me every time we have HP sauce, which makes us sound like a couple. Sum up
Soho. Which we're not.
Which we are. Which not yet. Which can you sum up Soho in three words?
Oh, God.
Fun all night.
Yeah. Oh, that was good.
Oh, that's a good one.
Very good.
Actually, that's a very good one.
Very good.
We should write these down.
You write them down. I'm too busy. Print, Tearing It Up, runs from 8th of June to 22nd of August at Somerset House. And it's free. Get yourself down there. Visit somersethouse.org.uk and at Somerset House for more ticket details. And for updates on all Paul's fabulous projects, follow him on Twitter at PJ Gorman. So thank you so much for joining us today.
No, thank you for having me.
We've had such a laugh with you. And the exhibition sounds brilliant.
Come on
right
down. Yeah,
thank
you.
Right up my Strasse. And please introduce, that's French, please introduce your final Soho track.
Well, this is September by Earth, Wind and Fire. And it was one of the first singles that I heard, at least, that came out on 12-inch, and which enhanced the sound when you're in a club. And upstairs at Ronnie Scott's on Sunday nights, I remember travelling up there from Camberwell in a cab with four friends.
Who paid?
It was a minicab, and this bloke, Mad Pat Collins, paid.
Good.
I remember the night very well. And we went in there because...
You're satisfied with that?
I am a bit of a dancing fool. And this is the greatest dance track ever. And it just really takes me back to that night in 1977 upstairs at Ronnie's.
Chasing the clouds.
This is Soho Radio.
Plan B and Love Goes Down. Hey, welcome to the second hour of BB Does Soho. I'm BB Lynch and you're listening to Soho Radio Culture, sohoradiolondon.com, and click on Culture. And we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio. Coming
just
to you.
It trips off your tongue, doesn't it? It's great.
Coming to you from our beautifully bijou pop-up and studio on Great Windmill Street. Come down and say hi. If you're too shy, say hi. Tweet us at Soho Radio or at BB Lynch. We would love to hear from you. I tell you what, Nick.
Yeah.
You're pushing me.
Okay. I like the challenge. That was great, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. So the brilliant Paul Gorman just told us all about his amazing exhibition at Somerset House, which our next guest will be really into, and all about his Soho. And he was fascinating, even though he wants to demolish Soho.
Yeah.
What a brute.
Interesting. Controversial point of view.
The whole point about Soho, I think the main anger is, like you said, it's been gentrified to the extent that no one can live here. Yeah. But that's London and the South East.
Things
isn't
have
it?
To change.
They really do, Nick. You're so profound. And in a few minutes, Polari's fabulous Paul Burston will be here. But first, ladies and gents, it's Yvonne Elliman. And if I can't have you,
then I don't want anyone.
No one. Yvonne Elliman, and
you
if
join
I
us mid-laugh.
Stop it. Yvonne Elliman, and if I can't have you, a bit needy.
Yeah.
Hey, Paul Burston, friend of show, Paul Burston's here.
Hello.
You love a bit of Yvonne.
That's one of my favourite disco songs of all time. I used to dance at Bridgend Youth Club Disco, age of 10, in high-waisted trousers with the high-heeled Cuban shoes and everything, spinning around the dance floor to that song.
Did you spin?
Yeah. I liked all the routines, all the Night Fever routines.
He's doing a routine.
I was obsessed with them.
Oh, my God. Did you see that footage of the off-duty FBI officer who was dancing at a party or in a club and did a backflip and his gun fell out and landed on the floor and shot someone? What a beautiful testament.
Oh, America.
Do you have a gun, Paul?
I don't have a gun, no.
Do you want a gun?
I'm not packing today.
Oh. Paul.
Yes.
I've been sent a gift.
Yeah.
Please, I'd like to give you the gift of the gift of opening the gift.
Okay.
Shall I? You've got it? I'll reach down.
So this relates to the guest on the last programme.
It's a big box.
Thank you so much. Don't call me that.
Big box here, everyone.
Big box. This was from a guest. My memory is such that I can't remember your surname. So yes, I'm not sure if it was the last show or the show before. It was the last show. It was a recent show.
And
we had a gorgeous
BB
guest.
Some swag. In a lovely brown paper.
Are your hands clean?
Discreet brown paper packaging.
Are your hands clean?
So
these
are free.
Classic wand.
Oh my goodness. Love Honey have sent me a classic wand, which is a massage wand vibrator. How's your
Andy?
Back? What else is in there?
Massage, and we've got some... Vibrator. Oh, look at...
What is it? You describe it.
We've got a sort of basque.
Wow.
Some sex dice. Take a tumble with these dice. Ooh. A bit dicey.
Lovely. And so sex dice are basically
goodness,
just
there's so many things
dice.
In here.
Really?
Oh, yeah, they've
too
really
much.
Gone to town.
Oh, I love them. Is that
some
like
water-based lubricant. Water-based. Always use water-based lubricant.
Because the other ruins the condoms.
Perishes.
Perish the thought. What's that?
And then you've got some vanilla massage.
Can I eat
massage
that?
Candle.
I'm so hungry.
That's a candle.
So hungry.
That's it. That's your lot.
Oh, thank you so much, love, honey. Thank you, Paul. Put that back, Paul.
Aren't they kind?
Don't.
Oh, smell the vanilla candle.
Oh,
it's
I
like
love
ice
a candle.
Cream. Don't eat it.
Don't eat it.
Oh, that's delicious. I'm going to massage my body.
Wow.
When I was a kid. Thanks, Paul. Thanks,
so
love, honey.
That'll help your stiff neck.
Yeah. When
stiff
I am.
Something.
Paul, put it back. Don't steal it. Paul, put the basque away. That's not going to suit you. When I was a kid, apparently I used to sit on my uncle, one of my uncle's laps, and say, "Do you
don't like the way direction
and
this
say,
is going?"
Do you like my body? But in that voice. I think I was 17, 18.
Really
do you like my body?
Creepy. Just change the subject.
Producer Nick thinks I should go on a diet.
I happened to mention there was this low-carb diet that I was interested in.
Right.
And I thought it was an interesting thing. And I was just, you know, as making conversation, she has it in her mind that I'm telling her that she's overweight.
He rang me specifically.
Which was not the case.
Have either of you ever seen Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Because that's how I feel right now.
I have, and I, yes, welcome to my life.
Welcome to Soho Radio.
Thanks
welcome
for having
to
me.
Soho, and you are indeed a friendo's show. How have you been?
I've been great. I've been touring. I've been on a. We've done our. Just finished our 10th birthday tour.
So congratulations and happy birthday.
We were in Dublin last week for our last event. So yeah. It's all done touring for the time being. And
was
that was
touring
all,
fun?
It was great, yeah. It was. I mean, it was a bit strenuous because there were 16 dates all around the UK. So we travelled a lot. But it was quite spread out.
Yeah.
So it was really good. Yeah, I mean, we had really good audiences and it was a big success. So. Now it's the prize, Polari Prize, and then we'll start touring again probably later in the year. I like being on the road.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you...
I like hotels. I love staying in hotels.
I even love a crap hotel, don't you?
Oh, no. Premier Inn, I'm happy.
Yeah. Do you take the... You got the little thingies?
What thingies? Thingies. Oh, I collect those.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you get them in a Premier Inn?
No.
Do they stretch?
You have
no,
to... You
no,
get
you have a big one stuck on the wall. Oh, just squeeze
yeah.
A bit
oh, how
out.
Delicious.
Not the same.
How classy.
I like my little miniatures.
Yeah, you oh, don't get
that's
the,
why you like me.
Yeah.
Almost 5 foot two. Yeah. Paul, I couldn't help but notice you have a huge suitcase.
Well, it's a small suitcase. It's a cabin bag.
Where you go?
I'm going to Mallorca.
Wow.
This afternoon. Yeah.
You're on holiday?
Just for a few days, yeah. I've got a friend there called Laura Lockington, and... my husband has just disappeared off to Peru. He's not doing the Inca Trail, Machu Picchu, with his friend Darren.
You didn't fancy that?
I didn't really I'd love to see it. I didn't fancy the sort of 2 days hiking. It's not really me. So I thought, well, he's doing that with Darren, which is great because they're really good buddies and they don't see each other very often because Darren now lives in LA. They can do that. They used to dance together back in with Matthew Bourne some years ago.
Really?
Yeah. They were in Swan Lake and everything together. So they've gone off to do that. And then I'm going to go to Mallorca and just sort of see my friend Laura and drink.
And not dance.
And swim in the sea.
And not worry
kind of
about
stuff.
The lack of oxygen at high altitude.
exactly.
Oh, my God. Well, look, it's lovely to see you. You're here to talk to us about a million things to open my gifts, not steal my gifts, but mainly to talk about Polari, which is at the Southbank Centre on June 26th. And it's the award-winning LGBT+ literary salon, and it's returned for the summer season. So what's going to go on that night?
Well, we've got... there'll be 5 authors, poets... spoken word performers reading, hosted, introduced by me. The headliner is Philip Hensher, who is one of our favourite writers at Polari. He's been on the bill several times, but he's back with his new book, which is called The Friendly Ones, and it's had the most amazing reviews, so I'm really thrilled we've got him. And we've got people like Amanda Jennings on the bill. It's a really good lineup. And we'll also be announcing the long list for this year's Polari First Book Prize, which is a prize we've been running that since 2011 for a debut book with LGBT themes content.
Is that the only criteria?
Yeah. So it can be by anybody, but it's not about the sexuality of the person who's writing it, it's about what's in their actual book. So we've got I mean, I think partly because of the touring activities, we've had sort of four times as many submissions this year. It's gone completely mega this year. We've had so many books sent in, which is great. It's great to see the publishers are publishing these books. And we started the prize because of the lack of that, the lack thereof. And for a long time, it was we mostly got books from independent small publishers or self-published books. We accept self-published books. And that was sort of a reflection of the caution of the industry, really, that they wouldn't really sort of back what they saw as niche books.
Yeah.
And what's interesting this year is you've had so many submissions from major houses. So clearly that's changing, which
that's
is great
so good.
News.
That's
fantastic.
So good. This is a dumb question, so of course I'm going to ask it. When you were touring around, is there... I remember we interviewed the Friend O's show, and I bet you know him, Scotty. Do you remember about 3 weeks ago anyway? And he was talking about, he was saying how unsurprised he was by the Brexit result because he'd been around the country and kind of seen everything that maybe a lot of
out
us aren't
of the
seeing.
London
yeah.
Bubble.
So I guess the tenuous link I'm trying to make is when you were going to places that weren't just London or, you know, where you live, which is still a cool place, and where I live, which is still a cool place. Did Polari get different reactions? Did you have to gear it differently?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, if you go to the major cities where there are what I call gay refugees, you know, I mean, most cities attract, you know, the refugees, all the odd people that couldn't stand living in small towns. They all flee to the big cities. So if you go to those cities, it's pretty much like you'd get in London, you know, slightly different, obviously, depending on the culture of the city. But by and large, it's that kind of vibe. If you go to smaller places where all the LGBT people and others have left a long time ago, it tends to be quite different. So your audiences tend to be more sort of liberal, straight people. Mm. There'll be some LGBT people, but it'll be fewer on the whole, I think. And sometimes it's hard to get an audience in those places, obviously, because, I mean, we had not on this tour, but on the last tour, we were in Blackpool, and people were afraid to come to we do writing workshops during the day, and then one person from the workshops is chosen to join the bill in the evening. And
That's a great idea.
Yeah, and people were actually frightened to come to the workshop in case they were seen going, and what that may say to the neighbours about them. So these issues are still alive out there. And I think it's very easy for us to forget that. I certainly was not aware of quite how difficult it still is for people in small towns.
I remember
Tim Berlina saying the same thing to me. He did a tour around and exactly there were people afterwards who said, I wish I could have come, but I just couldn't.
Yeah, they don't want to be seen to be associating with it. Or we've had situations where people have been on the bill. So, because we always try and use local people as much as possible. So we have a travelling group of artists, myself, a woman called VG Lee, and a woman called Karen McLeod, and we travel pretty much together. And then we'll get people that are local on the bill. And sometimes those people are happy to do it, but they don't want their name publicised. So when you're publicising the event, you can't actually mention the local author because they don't want their name in the paper as being identifiably gay, which is... It's 2018, and this is still...
That was a chicken and egg thing as well, because if they are... You know, that's the only thing that's going to change.
Of course.
And let it snowball if people do
more
out. Yeah.
Let's play a song, and I'm going to lift the mood.
Okay, what do we have? What do you fancy?
What's next?
Curtis Mayfield.
Oh, sure.
Here it is.
I love Curtis.
Face to face. place with only you.
You're listening to BB Does Soho on Soho Radio, and that was Curtis Mayfield and Only You, Babe. Who do you think has got the sweetest soul voice, Curtis or Al Green?
Al Green.
I'm inclined to say Al Green as well.
The Reverend.
Are you religious?
No.
Are you religious?
No.
Do you know Al Green lives in Memphis and he has a church there, and his church is the Al Green whatever church, and it's on Al Green Way. They named the street after him. So if you want to write to him, it's the Reverend Al Green, the Al Green Church, Way. Number one Al Green Way.
If you had a street named after you, what kind of street? I think I'd want a cul-de-sac named after
Would
me.
You?
Yeah. Kind of seems...
You know what that means?
It's
quite apt.
It's quite apt. More Polari. So, you found More Polari.
Boner.
I love that. You founded Polari in 2007, so happy birthday for last year.
Thank you.
Why did you found it?
I started it because in 2007, earlier that year, I published a novel. It was my third novel, and I was with a major publisher, Little Brown, and I'd never been invited ever to a book festival of any description, three books in. And I'd published non-fiction books as well, so a total of about eight books by that point. And I was quite peeved about it. And the book came out in May, so I'd missed History Month, which is in February when all the libraries book you because they have to tick that box. And so I thought, well, I can either sit here and sort of bitch and complain or I can do something. So I thought I'll just put on a night and see what happens. And I was DJing part-time at the Green Carnation in Soho, which is now gone, sadly. And I put it to the guy that was I worked with there that I'd like to do this night. And the original plan was to have a night with me DJing, playing kind of loungy music, and then we'd stop the music and we'd have one person doing a quick poem or a quick short reading. The owners were so worried that the minute the music stopped, all the people would leave. And thankfully they didn't. So it kind of grew from that. And it started very small. It was just literally about 12, 20 people sometimes. And then after about the fourth or fifth one, Will Self came to read because he'd published his book Dorian, that was his reimagining of Dorian Gray. And he came and it went completely mad then. It was just like you couldn't get in the door. And so it got lots of attention. Somebody from the South Bank Centre came along. We'd moved between different gay venues because gay venues, you always end up falling out over something and you move somewhere else. That's always the way it works. We also grew one, but the space was too small by the end. So we'd moved.
It's just too small.
Well, you know, we just got too big, darling. So we moved. I think we were in our third or fourth bar. We were in Freedom Bar. And somebody from South Bank came along and said, oh, why didn't you bring it to South Bank Centre? So that was in 2009, and we've been there ever since. And it's great there because they look after you. I mean, in the bars, it's great. We still do gigs in bars. You do gigs at the Light Lounge in Soho, and I really like doing those because you get a different audience that wouldn't maybe go feel comfortable going to an art centre or a bookish place. They are more happy listening to stuff like that in a bar. But it's a lot more work for me because at the South Bank, you've got all that kind of infrastructure behind you. So all you do is just get there and just host.
Yeah.
Nothing else to worry about.
They do all the publicity.
They do everything. Yeah. They do the marketing. They do all the ticket sales, everything. It's all out of my hands, which is great.
When you founded Polari, so it was for a platform,
yeah,
effectively, but there was a message as well?
Absolutely. And the message was that, you know, there are these people writing these books and there are audiences willing to wanting to support them and come along and hear them and buy the books. And, you know, if publishers insist on saying, well, there's no audience for these books, so we're not going to market them, well, how on earth do you know? I mean, you wouldn't release a washing powder and not tell the world you've released the washing powder. So what they do is they put out a gay book and they put no publicity around it whatsoever. I never had any marketing spend on my books. And then they're surprised when those books don't sort of tip or, you know, sell certain numbers. Well, of course they're not going to, because you're not marketing them or promoting them properly. So, you know, part of the message of Polari is, you know, look, you know, sit up and take notice, basically. And as it's grown, we always have a headliner who is going to be quite an established writer because they're the people that bring in the larger number of audiences. But then, you know, within the bill, we'll have at least one person who probably never read in public before, because I think it's very important to be encouraging emerging talent, whether they're young or older. But if they're first timers, it's important to help provide a platform for them. And as an elder myself now, I feel
what?
Like I now that I'm in my mature years, I feel I need to support the youngsters and the
really?
Newbies. Yeah,
Sodom.
I do.
Pass on the baton.
Pass on the baton. Not kick the ladder away.
Kick the ladder away, burn the ladder. And talking of baton, I dreamt last night I was in a stately home, and Gillian Tailforth, Kathy from EastEnders, we were doing a showbiz
I think of her more as like the co-host of On Safari, but because I don't watch EastEnders.
She did... There was a showbiz relay and she handed the baton to me and I started running, Paul Burston, you read this post, and I was aware that I had no bra on. Right. So I ran up some stairs in a stately home and Niles Crane opened the door to me and I went in the bedroom and I said, oh God, I'm so sorry. And I went to open another door and he said, don't go in there. And it was too late when then there was a Swedish porn film being filmed.
Oh, okay. Do you eat a lot of cheese before you go?
Your dreams are even more
extraordinary
mad than mine.
Yeah,
I can never remember.
I think it's the medication or the need for medication. So the message. So it was a platform, and there was a message. And we were just talking when quite rudely, actually, producer Nick, when Curtis was singing his little heart out to us, because he's live in the studio. Everyone, that we. That Brexit has enabled a kind of sense of people with vile views feel emboldened to come out with them. And, you know, you said that, you know, maybe you've experienced that still.
Absolutely.
Does the new Polari, does it address any of those issues?
I think anything that showcases LGBT voices. So, I mean, I wouldn't say that what we do is overtly political in the sense that it's not sort of people making campaigning speeches on stage, obviously. But obviously people's, you know, fiction, poetry, memoir, whatever it is they're writing, whatever it is that they're bringing to the table, is going to be reflecting their experiences. So we have had some very overtly political people on at Polari. We've had Neil Bartlett came one time and just delivered this incredible piece about this notion that somehow everything was fixed now and everything was okay because it's okay to be gay now, which of course is absolute rubbish. You know, walk down the street holding hands with somebody, especially if you're two men. Women is maybe lesser because straight women tend to be more physically affectionate anyway. Yeah. But you hold another man's hand in the street and I guarantee it, you'll get something. You'll get verbal, if nothing else. So, you know, that stuff is still out there. And I think to give people a place to share their stories, whether they're their own stories or whether they're stories that they've written that in some way illuminate their experience of being gay in this culture, that is of itself a political statement.
Is that kind of attitude more so in Britain, in Europe, is it? I mean, I would have thought that we were more broad-minded here, she says, stumbling over the words, because I don't actually think that's true.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, you look at countries like Spain and Portugal, who you think would be quite conservative Catholic countries. They were some of the first countries to...
First with gay marriage.
To legalise gay marriage.
Yeah.
So I don't know. There's no rhyme or reason to it.
My favourite gay couple, we're going to play a song by them now.
Okay.
Charles and Eddie.
You should be on the radio. It's just seamless, isn't it? Seamless. Didn't even realise. There we were, gassing away.
No, sorry,
casting aspersions at my sexuality.
We just got too close.
Caught us unaware, and you were too close.
Sorry.
Charles and Eddie, let's pretend,
so we were talking about Madonna. We talk about being on a plane with Madonna.
Yeah, that's right.
And you've met Madonna?
I've never met Madonna, no.
Do you want to?
I would like to meet Madonna, yeah.
Nick, have you met her?
Yes, yeah, briefly.
What was she like?
Very professional, very, quite cold.
Were those in her English years?
No, because I was working on a show that she was on, multi-artist show, and she was a little bit irritating because she insisted on rehearsing one track at least 30 times.
Yeah, 30 times.
And keeping the crew there till very late.
Could you set it up for Paul Burston, to my right, friend O'Show, to meet her?
Probably not.
Oh, that's a shame.
Did you notice that Nick didn't even
just tell her if she's going to come into my dreams, don't smoke on the plane.
Just
to explain, while that record was ending, and we were totally distracted. We were talking about dreams, and Paul was saying he often dreams of Madonna. In case anyone was wondering what the complete non sequitur was.
So that's Would I Lie to You. Charles and Eddie. Are you a good liar, Paul Burson?
Not really, no.
Oh, right.
No.
Your little face give you away.
That's good. That's
a... Well, I'm quite good at sort of small lies, you know, like... Once, you know, oh, that's a lovely bottle of wine. Thank you so much. When actually, it's when you really hate. Obviously, that's different. But something important.
Oh, that's really
no.
Fabulous.
No. I love Blue Nun. That's another story.
Yeah. It's another dream. Another Madonna dream.
Another Madonna
Jesus,
dream.
Jesus, she's everywhere.
But no, I'm not very good at the big ones.
No. I've got the Catholic girl. I can't. It's pathetic. Anyway. So Polari always gets amazing reviews. Let me read you. I'm going to read you some of your reviews.
Oh, go on then.
An essential night on the LGBT.
Essential.
Essential.
Oh, essential.
Oh, Jesus Christ! Stop questioning my diction. An essential night on the LGBT plus calendar. That's Time Out. And London's most theatrical salon. That's the New York Times. But you're not just London. Have you gone abroad with it?
We haven't been abroad yet. I mean, Dublin's technically abroad, but
abroad.
We haven't really been abroad. I would like to do something broader at some point, maybe not next year, maybe the year after. So I have been having discussions about possible places.
What sort of countries do you think it would work?
Well, it would need to be English speaking for it to work, really, because I can't speak any other languages. and
you've got time.
I probably know. I'd like to go to New York. And there are other places I've got in mind, Toronto maybe, and then we'd see about the others. But that's not going to happen in the immediate future.
We're going to sort that out because if Nick can't get you Madonna, I can get you New York. So you've had amazing authors and performers, and as you said earlier, you had Will Self, and you've had Stella Duffy, Fenella Fielding, brilliant Celia Imrie. What's been your most memorable Polari moment?
It's probably when Celia Imrie was on because. She's really. I'd met her at a friend's book launch, and she's absolutely just such a lovely, warm, bubbly person, and really friendly. And we got chatting, and we discussed the possibility of her maybe coming and reading something, because she had a memoir out called The Happy Hoofer, which is fantastic. And but what she wanted it that we didn't mention that she was on the bill, so it was a surprise.
Oh, okay.
So. I can't remember who the headliner was officially in the headliner that night, but basically she was on to just before the last person, just after the interval, and it was all there were just a few little sort of hints given to our regulars. We have a mailing list and we have people who follow us on social media and stuff like that. So we put a few hints out that it may be her. But so when she came on, at least half the audience had no idea she was going to be there, and they went completely insane. You know, we're just going to be obviously. She's like, I mean,
so,
you know,
brilliant.
Find me a gay man who can't quote Akon Antiques. You know,
Miss Babs,
exactly. Yeah. So she's, you know, she's such an icon. When I met her, when I actually went to this party, she said to me, "Am I a GI?" And I said, "Sorry." She said, "GI," and I thought, "What does she mean? GI diet? GI Jane?" Because no. G.I. gay icon.
And you curtsied.
Of course you are. I mean, how could you not be? You're Celia Imrie.
She's more of a G.I. than Judy Waters. Why is she more, do you think?
I think they both are.
Mm. I think anyone who's appeared in any Victorian Wood sketch is automatically. By default.
Yeah. As is Fenella Fielding, of course. She was another, that was another highlight, was having Fenella on. Because she'd... I came into the office at Time Out, and there was in the morning arriving for work, and on my voicemail there's this voice going, "Hello, is this working? Darling, it's Fenella here, Fenella Fielding. I'll call you back later." And I rang my husband at home. I said, "You never guess who just phoned me." He said, "She phoned here too, Fenella Fielding.
Is this working?"
Basically, she was ringing because a friend of hers from America was coming to visit, and he'd written this memoir about growing up surrounded by all these famous people. So Noel Coward would come for dinner, people like that. And the book was called something superficial, deeply superficial. And she said, could you come and read? I said, "Of course." And then a week before, she rang and said, "Oh, he's a bit nervous of reading. Would it be okay if I was to read?" I was like, "No, go on then." Go on then.
Say, just sort your voice out. Yeah. Make sure you've got a distinctive voice.
Yeah, practice, Fenella, practice.
I did some recording with her once a long time ago. And we made her a cup of tea or coffee or whatever. And at the end, she said, "Oh, thank you, darling. It's been fun." And she said, bye, see you again. And she walked. She was still holding the half-drunk cup of coffee. And she left and she walked down the street with one of our China mugs.
So she's a thief.
That's pure thieving Fenella.
If you're listening, Fenella.
Yeah, we forgive you.
Can you bring it back?
Do you prefer her to me?
Of course.
Okay, let's have...
Do you think you're a GI?
I really would love to be a GM.
Oh, I think you're teetering on the edge.
Oh
aren't
my
you?
God, really?
Oh, I think yeah. so. Yeah.
Shall we award her the status?
I think we should.
Let's celebrate. That's
genuinely,
with the,
yeah, with celebrate a bit of Star Council.
Oh well, you're the best thing. How appropriate.
Best thing, the Star Council. So on Facebook the other day, someone said something about forgiving Paul Weller, and someone else came in and said, "What, for the Star Council?" And he went, "Yeah." And I went, "I love the Star Council." He said, "No, I, yeah." And he said, "No, I like the Star Council, but it upset me because he disbanded the Jam to Mozart Castles. Okay. That's why he's upset. But in other news, and this is extraordinarily brilliant, Paul Weller's going to be here at Soho Radio on the June the 11th between 2 and 4. And we do a brilliant thing here where amazing artists perform and the performance is recorded and put onto vinyl instantly. How exciting is that? How does that work, Nick?
It's smoke and mirrors.
It's like magic.
Yeah.
Like faxing. Faxing's
wax
magic.
Wax cylinders.
Oh, blimey. Well, anyway, there's some waxing, faxing magic going on here on June the 11th, rather. And I don't know. The word on the street is that I'll be here naked. I don't know.
Window licking.
just dry humping the window. That's all I'm saying. Is that a nice image, Paul?
It's a lovely image.
Thank you.
It's not really.
I shall have dreams tonight.
Don't undo your buttons in front of me. Look at your chest. You've got, Paul's got such a, and you, Nick, you've both got beautiful bodies.
Really haven't. Well, I can't answer for all, but I really haven't.
What do you do, Paul? What's your regime?
I go to the gym every day.
Do you? Mm. What do you do? Weights?
I mostly do aerobic stuff these days.
To Madonna?
To Madonna, yeah. Actually, I do. I often run or do the cross trainer to Madonna. I go a bit mad if I don't exercise, to be honest.
Because
my job is so, you know, I'm sitting at home, it's in front of my laptop or my computer, either doing spreadsheets or writing novels, and it's all very sort of sitting downy and
sedentary.
Yeah, exactly.
Sedentary.
And I just need to get out of the house and have an hour of just doing something physical.
So, and do you get the endorphin rush?
Oh, completely. And I miss it.
Yeah.
I mean, because I live in Hastings part of the time, and I don't go to the gym. I just go along the seafront, because why would you go and be on a treadmill if you've got that amazing promenade? So I go and sort of power walk or jog there. But no, I do go every single day.
Do you swim?
Yes, I love swimming.
In the sea?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you swim in the sea?
No.
It's cold. It's still cold now.
I'm from Brighton, but I don't swim in the sea.
Why would you?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it's amazing.
Hey, Paul, I can't swim and my dad was a lifeguard. Anyway, our previous guest, Paul Gorman, is hosting a great event I think you would love. It's called...
Print.
Thank you.
With an exclamation
mark. Tear It Up. And it's an exhibition at Somerset House. It's about the history of kind of independent magazines, but current independent magazines too.
Great.
Sounds great, doesn't it? And your background, of course, is magazines. You were the founding editor of Attitude.
Yeah.
And edited the, it was called the Lesbian and Gay Section then in Time Out, which was the first indie print mag that kind of captured you when you were a kid.
Gosh.
Mine was The Face.
Oh, no, I was obsessed with The Face. I was obsessed with Smash Hits before that. I was obsessed with my old... I have an older stepsister, and I was obsessed with her copies of Lookin' and Mates.
You were Mates?
Read into that what you will.
Lookin' was amazing, because you'd have, like, George and Mildred cartoons, you know.
What?
Like, comic strip Youth of Joyce, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then something about the Muppets, and then maybe an article about David Cassidy
or
the Jacksons.
What age? You know, I used to buy... French L, and I don't speak French.
Well, just to pretend to be sophisticated.
Yeah, pretty much.
Bless.
I know, it's horrible, isn't it? Horrible child, lots of freckles. What does the next 10 years hold for Polari?
Well, the prize is... there are going to be some developments of the prize. I'm planning on introducing other strands to it now that it's grown to such a size, and maybe having not just one prize, but several prizes, different categories. I want to tour... beyond the UK.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to, at some point in the next couple of years, put together some anthology with a publisher of writers that have performed at Polari over the years that maybe aren't as well-known names, together with some of the better-known names as a marketing. So obviously package them together, get something out, some sort of Polari imprint. That's the long-term plans.
That's such a great thing. And I loved what you were saying earlier about, so you have the writing workshops, so what goes on then, and then the person that impresses you most goes on
that's
the bill on, that night?
That's only when we're touring. We don't do those in London. When we're touring, we do those. Basically, it's a two-hour workshop run by VG Lee or Karen McLeod with me, myself, and we get local people in, we give them exercises to do, some writing exercises to get things warmed up. And then we get them to create a piece of work during the 2 hours. And then one person, not everyone who comes to writing workshop is somebody that wants necessarily to read on stage. It's quite a scary thing, reading your work on stage. I'm sort of still quite nervous about doing it after all these years. So if you're new, it's pretty daunting. So we usually find that they aren't usually, it's not usually the case that everyone that comes wants to do that anyway. but we have to narrow it down to one person because we haven't got time for everyone. But we'll pick someone that either we think is the best and or they'll fit best within the bill that we have. Yeah. So maybe we've got a very, very male lineup and we like a woman or vice versa.
Yeah.
Or just the tone of the work. We want something that's a bit lighter or a bit darker compared to what else we've got on the bill.
See, it's inclusive.
And it's very inclusive.
This is the whole point, isn't it? I love this. And talking of inclusive, I'm a very generous woman. I mean, I don't know if I've ever given you a gift, but I've got a box of stuff here. And I every show give producer Nick, to my left, the gift of music.
Oh, you see. Yeah.
He often annoys me with what he chooses. Let's see what's happening
today. So this
today.
Is, yeah, producer Nick's choice section. Well, it's so much pressure, Paul. You know, do I choose something that I like or do I choose something I think she'll like?
That I like.
So really, it's not a free choice, is
it's
it?
It's like Sophie's choice.
You know.
Bibi's choice.
Well, I was going to choose David Bowie because I know you and I, Paul, like David Bowie. Mm, but
I like him
but
too.
I didn't in the end.
Okay.
No, I went with the Rolling Stones.
Oh,
I like the Rolling Stones too.
Great.
Yeah, two against one.
Great.
Playing in London in a couple of weeks' time, Emotional Rescue.
Sure. He's saying is, I did marry you, but it wasn't a legal ceremony. That was awful.
You dissing Mick Jagger?
A little bit. Okay. If you have a marriage that turns out not to be legal, do you think they got loads of presents? In which case, did they have to return the presents?
I can't
because
comment
it, do you,
on what,
I mean, what do you,
no
what's the point of you?
Of
what's the point of you?
I just know he has his liaisons. That's a
all through today's
it?
Show, I've been Good looking at him. You because you've been sitting side on to me. Some beautiful lashes on you.
I'm feeling a bit awkward now.
Hey, Paul. What I like to do. Oh, producer Nick. Yeah. We've just heard a story from Paul that centred around phlegm, so we're going to leave that. But
one day we should do this pop show star the other way around.
It was pop star.
It was pop star phlegm.
What we talk about when yes.
Like. Producer Nick.
Yeah.
You know I like to give our listeners some take home.
Yeah.
So please tell me what you've learnt from today's show.
I have learned that I really need to go and see Print at Somerset House.
Yeah.
And try and catch one of Paul's Polari shows.
It's good, isn't it?
You've been well trained, haven't you?
Right. Well, you know that. I need to say goodbye and thank my guest. Thank you, Paul Gorman. Print, Tearing It Up, runs from 8th of June to the 22nd of August at Somerset House, and it's free, so get yourself down there. Visit somersethouse.org.uk and at Somerset House for more details, for more ticket deals. And for updates on all Paul's fabulous projects, follow him on Twitter at PJ Gorman. Thank you, gorgeous Paul Burston.
Thank you.
Have a lovely holiday.
Yeah,
I will.
So you're going straight to the airport from here.
Buy me something, but not too expensive, because it's just going to be embarrassing, but something, obviously.
Okay.
Polaris at the South Bank Centre on Tuesday, June 26th. It's what?
It's olives. One of those cock-shaped bottle openers.
A cock-shaped bottle opener. Or ladies' legs crushing nuts. We used to have those when I was a kid from my dad that didn't teach me how to swim. So it's at South Bank Centre on Tuesday, June 26th from 7:30. For more info, follow at Polaris Salon on Twitter and visit Polari Literary salon.co.uk, and for updates on everything Paul Burston, go to paulburston.com. It's b-u-r-s-t-o-n, and follow him on Twitter at Paul Burston. Thank you, producer Nick.
Forgive me for what
you know, and most of all thank you for listening. That's it from me, BB Lynch. Until next time, stay tuned to your wonderful Soho Radio, and I'll leave you with Dave McCalmont and Honey Sweet. This is something I didn't think I'd do so soon.